This is KMXT Kodiak, 100.1 FM. KMXT is also in HD. We have HD2 and HD3. We also stream live on the web at kmxt.org. It's just about 12 o'clock noon on this Friday, July 24th. Currently 67 degrees at the Kodiak Airport with fair sunny skies and windy conditions. Wind is northwest at 35, gusting at 45 miles per hour. Expect similar conditions for the rest of today and tonight. We'll have your full weather report, tides, and almanac information coming up in just a little bit. But in the meantime, here's a quick synopsis for the North Gulf Coast and Kodiak Island waters. A 1,005 millibar low, 40 nautical miles south of Yakutat, exits southeast into the North Pacific by tomorrow morning. A 1,008 millibar low forms tomorrow night, 50 nautical miles southeast of Kodiak City, and then exits south into the North Pacific by Sunday morning. Coming up on KMXT Local News, we have information about the Pillar Mountain Road opening back up this week. Hundreds of seismic stations across Alaska are helping not only detect earthquakes, but now possibly identifying landslides. The U.S. Coast Guard base Kodiak held a change of command ceremony for the fast response cutter Frederick Mann on Wednesday. And a new app for sport fishermen across Alaska to use and track data, but it's especially helpful in Bristol Bay. Those stories and more coming up right after this.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Nora Rahm. The Trump administration has announced double-digit tariffs on dozens of U.S. trading partners. It's also threatening additional tariffs on the United Kingdom if its new prime minister taxes U.S. tech companies. NPR's Lauren Freer reports from London.
President Trump's ambassador to the United Kingdom, Warren Stevens, told Sky News that if the new British Prime Minister, Andy Burnham, decides to tax big tech, which is mostly American companies, that could trigger more tariffs from Washington. A digital services tax is something the UK has been considering. For now, though, the British government says Trump's latest tariffs will amount to, quote, no negative change for British exports. Burnham's predecessor, Prime Minister Keir Starmer, was able to strike a better U.S. trade deal than many other countries with lower tariff rates. And King Charles got the U.S. tariff on Scotch whiskey reduced to zero when he visited the White House in April. Lauren Freier, NPR News, London.
There was a ceremony today honoring the impending opening of a new bridge linking the United States and Ontario. As Russ McNamara of Detroit Public Radio reports, it was a Canada-only affair.
Oh, Canada.
The Trump administration nixed the ribbon-cutting ceremony last month, and with the president threatening new tariffs, Canadian officials threw their own party for the Gordie Howe International Bridge without American involvement. However, Ontario Premier Doug Ford is treating the soured relations between the two allies as a bump in the road.
I know Canadians love Americans, and I know Americans love Canadians, and that bond will last for another over 200 years.
The bridge will open to traffic Monday afternoon. For NPR News, I'm Russ McNamara in Windsor, Ontario.
The cyclospora outbreak that sickened thousands has expanded to four additional states. That's according to an update from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. NPR's Ping Wong reports.
The CDC has confirmed nearly 2,000 cases of cyclosporiasis over the past month in a multi-state outbreak. It says the true count of people sickened may be much higher. The parasite has been causing intestinal issues and explosive diarrhea across at least nine states now, including Illinois, Kansas, Oklahoma, and Pennsylvania. 98 people have been hospitalized and no one has died. The parasitic infection can be treated with an antibiotic, though most healthy people can recover without treatment. The CDC says the data continues to show that iceberg lettuce grown and processed by Taylor Farms de Mexico and served at Taco Bell restaurants is a source of the contamination. The company announced a voluntary recall last week on all its iceberg lettuce sourced from central Mexico. Ping Huang, NPR News.
This is NPR News in Washington. Tens of thousands of people have been forced from their homes in France and Spain because of large wildfires. Both countries are seeking help from the European Union. Several large fires have erupted in southern Europe this summer. Scientists say the region has become more vulnerable due to hotter temperatures caused by climate change. The International Energy Agency says that renewables are set to overtake coal as an electricity source in 2026. NPR's Julia Simon reports.
In their electricity mid-year update, the agency says global renewable energy is forecast to grow 8% in 2026. Natural gas output is projected to stay mostly flat. A big part of what's hampering natural gas growth are high prices following the U.S.-Israeli war with Iran. 5 months after the conflict began, European natural gas prices are more than 90% higher. Asian natural gas prices are more than 105% higher. Meanwhile, solar and battery installations are booming around the world. Energy experts say 2026 may go down in history books as the year that the world made a significant pivot away from planet-heating fossil fuels. Julia Simon, NPR News.
Basketball star LeBron James has made his decision. He's becoming a Philadelphia 76er for his 24th season. He says it's not the money or family considerations. He wrote on social media, "I still want to sacrifice. I still want to work." He says he thinks he can help make Philadelphia a championship team. The franchise hasn't won the title in 43 years. I'm Nora Rahm, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Public Welfare Foundation, committed to advancing a transformative approach to justice that is community-led, restorative, and racially just. Learn more at publicwelfare.org. And the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation at macfound.org.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT News, I'm Davis Hovey. It's 12:06. Good afternoon. After being closed to vehicles for more than 5 months, the road up Pillar Mountain was reopened on Wednesday. As KMXT reports, the city of Kodiak waffled on reopening the road due to the ongoing risk of landslides. Back in February, Kodiak saw nearly 2.5 inches of rain in one day, setting a daily record for February 3rd, according to the National Weather Service. 2 days later, the city's Public Works Department closed the road up Pillar Mountain due to a landslide that caused a section of the access road near the gravel pit to collapse. Since then, the road has been closed to all vehicles, but pedestrians have still been able to use the road and access nearby trails. Interim City Manager Tim Putney says that access on the mountain has always been a focus of public attention.
There are a lot of people that are pretty passionate about wanting to get up there again, so we decided to just move it up the list and forego some other projects just to kind of get that done.
Mainly, public comment has come on social media where residents have complained about the lack of access on Pillar Mountain for months. Initially, Putney and city staff had told the public via social media earlier this month that the safety and liability risks were too great to reopen the road. But Putney says the city's Public Works Department later came up with a solution.
So we felt by adding a few feet of road on the other side and putting a berm on the damaged side that we just open the gate so it's passable, put some of our safety concerns at rest.
Vehicles can now drive up the road with room for two to pass each other where the landslide took place. But driving on Pillar Mountain Road still poses a risk. A year and a half ago, a geotechnical engineering firm the city contracted with released a study on the landslide risks of areas around Kodiak. Several portions of the hillsides on Pillar Mountain could turn into a significant landslide, according to the study. And as Putney says, the city doesn't know how stable areas of the road are.
There's a lot of risk on Pillar. Bedrock is shallow. A lot of the topsoil is mixed with that volcanic ash, and you get a decent amount of rain in a short amount of time. It's liable to cause a landslide.
Prior to this year, a significant landslide occurred on Pillar Mountain in 1971, significantly impacting Razanoff Drive. That's according to the Landslide Risk Assessment Study, which indicates that the greatest cause of slope failure in the Kodiak area is extreme rainfall. Still, the road is set to remain open for the rest of this summer. The city will continue to monitor the damaged area of Pillar Mountain Road and have crews and equipment on standby next time heavy rainfall is in the forecast. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Hovey. In other news, hundreds of seismic stations across Alaska help experts detect earthquakes and send out relevant information to the public. But those stations could soon identify something new, landslides. As Avery Elfelt reports for the Alaska Desk, the effort comes as experts pay heightened attention to landslides and their capacity to spark potentially catastrophic tsunamis.
Landslides happen all the time in Alaska. But historically, the only way experts knew that a landslide had even happened was if someone witnessed it.
We would just like hear about the landslides happening somewhere, like, you know, like someone flying by, or just like, you know, someone would just see something in the remote sensing imagery.
Ezgi Korososin is a research seismologist with the Alaska Earthquake Center. She says that's a real challenge because in some cases, a landslide could go unnoticed and unrecorded for months, if not longer. That could soon change. The center has a sprawling network of seismic stations across the state that are primarily used to detect earthquakes. But several years ago, Karasosin and a colleague set out to see if they could also be used for landslides.
Turns out, like, we can do that. However, landslides are quite different, so that's why they actually go, unnoticed. We wouldn't detect these unless it's a super large landslide.
The effort involved creating an algorithm capable of recognizing the specific seismic signals usually associated with slides. Today, 200 stations across Alaska use that algorithm, which can, at least in theory, locate slides, pinpoint when they happened, and even estimate their size.
And we're continuously improving this algorithm to, you know, make it more robust.
Korososin says the network stands to fill a major knowledge gap amid heightened concern about landslides and their potential impacts on communities, infrastructure, and mariners. Just last year, a gargantuan slide in the Tracy Arm Fjord near Juneau generated one of the tallest tsunamis on record. Nobody died, but experts say the resulting wave could have overturned boats, including cruise ships, had any been present. The event, in addition to others in recent years, has spurred new conversation around the need for more landslide monitoring and a warning system. Korososin says the seismic network could potentially contribute to that goal.
Obviously, we are doing this for the hazard itself. So one shape or form, hopefully there'll be a warning system at some point.
Still, it's not foolproof. Korososin says a complicating factor is that Alaska is an incredibly seismic place. That means the seismic stations are constantly picking up signals from earthquakes, but also glaciers calving, rockfall, and more. So the big challenge is filtering out landslide signals from all the others and preventing false detections.
It's fair to say that this research is still quite young and we're still in, you know, developing phase.
She says it could be years before the algorithm is good enough to feed into a reliable warning system. Consider earthquakes. Researchers have been monitoring earthquakes for decades, Korososin says, and are just now developing an early warning system. Reporting in Haines, I'm Avery Elfelt.
The U.S. Coast Guard base Kodiak held a change of command ceremony for the fast response cutter Frederick Mann on Wednesday. During the ceremony, Lieutenant Abigail Valadez accepted the role of commanding officer of the vessel from Lieutenant Jacob Daubert. The Frederick Mann is the latest of three 154-foot fast response cutters to come to Kodiak. Construction on the vessel was completed in 2025, and the Coast Guard commissioned it on base Kodiak in February of this year. According to KMXT's previous reporting, the vessel will eventually be homeported in Seward. A spokesperson for the Coast Guard Arctic District wrote in an email that incoming commanding officer Valadez previously served as the operations officer on the Coast Guard cutter Willow, which is based in South Carolina. She won the Coast Guard's Latina-style Distinguished Military Service Award as a first-class cadet in 2021 for her efforts to diversify and expand the Coast Guard Academy's recruitment. Outgoing Commanding Officer Daubert received a Coast Guard Commendation Medal during the change of command ceremony for his service on the Frederick Mann. According to a Coast Guard announcement, Daubert has served on the Frederick Mann since the Coast Guard accepted delivery of the vessel in June of 2025. The Coast Guard spokesperson says that Daubert will be relocating to Juneau to work with the Southeast Alaska District Logistics Department. Commanding officers of fast response cutters typically serve for 2 years, according to the Coast Guard spokesperson. In other news, areas along the central Susitna Valley near Talkeetna are expected to see minor flooding through this afternoon. That's according to the latest forecast from the National Weather Service. Alaska Public Media reports the Talkeetna River was hovering around minor flood levels yesterday afternoon. And Weather Service lead forecaster Alan Shriver says there's a flood advisory in the area until 3 p.m. today.
Low-lying roads, low-lying spots kind of right along the river there, that's really going to be the type of flooding that we're most expecting at this point.
Talkeetna Public Radio Station KTNA reports that Alaska Railroad service north of Talkeetna was stopped yesterday due to a landslide as crews worked on clearing the area. Both the Talkeetna and Susitna rivers rose significantly after rain overnight. Shriver says South Central Alaska has seen a strong low-pressure system that began in the Bering Sea and moved across mainland Alaska. That, combined with several recent storms, caused more rain to fall on the area than usual this month, approaching record levels.
It's the multiple rounds of really somewhat anomalous rainfall. This is pretty wet by standards for July.
The Matanuska Susitna Borough declared a disaster for Talkeetna on Tuesday before the heavy rain and is requesting state support for help mitigating impacts to residents and buildings. Shriver says the area is set to see a break in the rainy weather as conditions dry up over the weekend. And our final story for today's midday report, in all Alaskan fisheries, good data is a critical part of management. But the collection of that data does not have to be left to just scientists. Within Bristol Bay's sport fishery, there's a new way for guides to report their catches and observations, helping build a robust record of Bristol Bay catches. KDLG's Jesse Sheldon reports.
Freshwater sport fish catch data used to be entered into logbooks for the Department of Fish and Game. But in 2019, the department cut that program. Here's Jason Dye, the deputy director for sport fishing at Fish and Game.
Back in May of 2019, that program ended primarily due to a budget reduction.
Biologists in the region say this created a data gap where managers no longer get regular counts on what sport fish species are being caught where and how many. But one University of Alaska Fairbanks master's student is trying to bridge that gap. Tanner Kohal studies Bristol Bay's fisheries and also works as a sport fishing guide out of Iliamna Village.
So we created an app that emulates the old Alaska Fish and Game logbook program, but instead we put it into a phone app that's much easier to use for guides.
Guides using the app can log whatever species guests are targeting, including king salmon, Dolly Varden, and rainbow trout. The goal is to have folks who are already out fishing every day help collect data on local sport fish populations throughout the Bristol Bay region, an area that has become a data desert. Kohal says this broadly sourced information can help direct the efforts of agency managers.
Our app takes advantage of the fact that there are sport fish guides fishing all these areas every day throughout the whole summer, and they're putting lots of different guests out there. And so when we take the data that they provide us, we get more bang for our buck.
This feature is included as part of an existing app called Skipper Science, a citizen science partnership that allows non-scientists in remote locations to record fishery data. Skipper Science was first piloted in 2021 in Alaska with the goal of collecting biological and environmental data from folks who are already out on the water every day.
So the first thing that people can do is go to their app store and download the Skipper Science app. It's a big wheel with a blue banner, and get signed up for an account and then search the Alaska Guide Network program within that app.
Kohal says this data can help area managers better understand what unique populations might need more attention and understand long-term trends in different fish populations.
As time goes on, we'll be able to build that long-term record just as we have for the sockeye fishery down in the bay.
Kohal says using this app is an easy way to help care for the fishery.
Guides can contribute this information and feel fulfilled that they are contributing somewhat of a record of the fishing health in the region.
Kohal says participating guides also get entered into drawings for goodies like new fly rods and bead boxes. Curry Cunningham is an associate professor at University of Alaska Fairbanks School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, and Kohal's advisor on the project. Cunningham says the app helps bridge the gap between fishermen and scientists.
Western Alaska is a big area, right? And the Alaska Department of Fish and Game Sport Fish Division does a great job, but they don't have that many people out there on the landscape to operate large-scale experiments to estimate abundance in all these watersheds.
Fish and Game's Jason Dye says this kind of data is useful for managers. He says that the department is also in the process of implementing other measures to help improve sport fish data in lieu of freshwater logbooks, including a revamp of their statewide harvest survey and king salmon permit programs. And on the note of data privacy, Cohal says not to worry, your honey hole is safe.
It's all confidential when it goes in there. Nobody's looking to get their spot blown up.
He says the app is up and running with several lodges already on board and logging observations, but they hope to expand its usage across the whole Bristol Bay region. In Dillingham, I'm Jesse Sheldon.
And for KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Davis Hovey. Have a good afternoon.
A comfortable home starts with the right heating setup, and many Alaskans are turning to heat pumps. Households from Metlakatla to Kodiak could be eligible for heat pump installation assistance through the Accelerating Clean Energy Savings Program. More information is available at akheatsmart.org. This message is supported by a grant from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's Climate Pollution Reduction Grants. ACES comes to you courtesy of Southeast Conference, Alaska Heat Smart, and the Alaska Municipal League.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon. Welcome to your second Island Messenger for July 24th. Today is Friday, finally, and it's a sunny Friday. You guys must have all been on your best behavior or something. All right. It is currently 67 degrees, 19 degrees Celsius, if you prefer Celsius. Fair and windy. Wind speeds are northwest 35, gales 45 miles per hour. It's pretty high winds. Keeps the bugs away, though. That's nice. This afternoon, still sunny, high near 73. Northwest winds 25 to 30. Gusts as high as 45. Tonight, still clear with a low around 53. Northwest wind 15 to 20. Gusts as high as 30. Saturday, a chance of rain after 4. Increasing clouds, high near 68. Northwest winds 5 to 15. Chance of precipitation is pretty low. Looks like we've got good weather going into the weekend. It is so sunny today. The sun rose at 5:49 a.m. and it will set again tonight at 10:42. If you want to catch the sunrise tomorrow, it's going to be at 5:51 a.m. That gives us 16 hours and 53 minutes of daylight. It's a loss of 3 minutes and 45 seconds as compared to yesterday. And on this day in history, the record high was 74 degrees in 1915 as well as 1923. The record low, 42 degrees in 1971. Mariners, this one's for you. Synopsis for the North Gulf Coast Kodiak Island waters, Cook Inlet. A 1,005 millibar low, 40 nautical miles south of Yakutat, exits southeast into the North Pacific by Saturday morning. A 1,008 millibar low forms Saturday night at 50 nautical miles southeast of Kodiak City, and then exits south into the North Pacific by Sunday morning. For Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles, you have a small craft advisory through tonight. Today, you have west winds of 30 knots with seas of 6 feet. Tonight, northwest winds of 30 knots with seas of 6 feet. And Saturday, northwest winds of 20 knots with seas of 4 feet. Marmot Island to Sitkanak from 15 to 85 nautical miles, you have a small craft advisory through tonight as well. Today, you have west winds of 30 knots with seas of 10 feet. Tonight, northwest winds of 30 knots with seas of 10 feet. And Saturday, northwest winds of 20 knots with seas of 7 feet. Chiniac Bay, you have a small craft advisory today. You also have northwest winds of 30 knots with seas of 4 feet. Tonight, you're looking at northwest winds of 20 knots with seas of 3 feet. And Saturday, northwest winds of 15 knots in the morning, becoming variable less than 10 knots with seas of 2 feet. For Marmot Bay, you have a small craft advisory today. You have west winds of 25 knots with seas of 5 feet. Tonight, northwest winds of 20 knots with seas of 2 feet. And Saturday, west winds of 15 knots, diminishing to 10 knots in the afternoon, seas of 2 feet. Lastly, for the Shelikof Strait, you have a small craft advisory through tonight. Today, you have west winds of 30 knots with seas of 7 feet. Tonight, west winds of 25 knots with seas of 5 feet. And Saturday, you have west winds of 20 knots with seas of 3 feet. All right, and speaking of water and ocean and things, the tides. The high tide is going to be here in a couple minutes in Kodiak at 12:27, high of 5 feet. The following low tide will be at 4:28 this afternoon of 3.8 feet. And the next high tide will be at 11:02 p.m. of 7.8 feet. For Larsen Bay, your high tide will be at 12:30 of 8.5 feet. Your low will be at 5:31 p.m. of 5.8 feet, and your following high this evening will be at 11:30 p.m. of 11.95 feet. And now let's hear from Fish and Game.
KMXT is awaiting a new announcement from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game here in Kodiak. To hear the most recent announcement regarding openings and closures around Kodiak, call 486-4559.
All right, nothing new from Fish and Game, apparently. That's all right. Let's go to some community announcements. The Investment Committee will hold a meeting on Friday, that's today, July 24th. This meeting will start at 3:30 p.m. in the City Conference Room, that is 710 Mill Bay Road, room 116. For additional information, you can call the clerk's office at 486-8636. This meeting is open to the public. The meeting will be live web streamed, and the web streaming link and meeting packet are available online at their website. For those who wish to request printed meeting materials or have questions regarding the meeting, please contact the clerk's office at 486-8636. Also from the clerk's office, nominating petitions for 1 one-year city council seat and 2 three-year city council seats are available in the city clerk's office. For additional information, you can call the clerk's office at 486-8636. Today is Friday, which means the Salvation Army Food Bank has a distribution today from 3 to 5 at 1855 Mission Road. If it's your first visit, please bring your ID and proof of residence. Salvation Army also needs egg cartons, and food bank volunteers are needed. Please stop by the Salvation Army to pick up an application. All right, and from the Kodiak Fisheries Research Center, they had new hours starting on the 21st, and they will go until August 28th. So if you want to go to Kodiak Fisheries Research Center's aquarium and touch tank, they have Thursday and Friday hours from 9 to 12, and their Tuesday hours will be the same, 12 to 4. And lastly, looking ahead from the Kodiak Island Borough, if you want to go to the Solid Waste Advisory Board regular meeting at the Kodiak Fisheries Research Center conference room, that will be on July 29th at 6 p.m. There will be an assembly work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers on the following day, July 30th at 6:30 p.m. These meetings are open to the public, and the meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough website. You can contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310 for any questions. Your meetings are also live streamed on the Kodiak Island Borough YouTube channel. And if you're already thinking about Wednesday, the Kodiak Harvest Food Co-op is hosting a midweek market happening every Wednesday from 5 to 6:30 on the co-op's covered patio. It's an opportunity to see what's been growing in the community and to meet the growers and makers. And now it is time for our spotlight, so I hope you will keep listening for that.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day. Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org. We'll be right back.
Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the July 24th edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. Oh boy, it looks like another sunny weekend ahead. Whatever shall we do? I predict we will all find a way to spend significant chunks of time in the great outdoors. One thing you can do is grab your fishing rods and give fishing another chance. The pinks are starting to show up in the salt off the beaches and in the rivers, too. So grab your lighter weight fishing gear and head out for some fun this weekend. It's going to be windy this weekend, so it may be a challenge for fly fishers. Might be a good idea to pack an ugly stick and some pixies as a backup. There are still some reds coming in at Passagshaw and Saltry, too, just not in great numbers. A disappointing year for reds so far. This week, we celebrate the return of astronomical twilight, which means an extra layer of darkness for a short period of time during our nights. Why celebrate the return of darkness? Well, it means we'll start seeing stars again, for one thing. Also, slightly darker skies mean a better chance to see the aurora with your naked eye if they go off. Right now, astronomical twilight starts around 1:40 in the morning and lasts an hour, maybe a little more. There are two Audubon hikes this weekend, both of them rated a number 5 in difficulty, which means very difficult because of elevation gain, terrain, and the length of the hike. Saturday's hike is to Triple Crown, led by Veronica Costa Bolton, and Sunday's hike is Cope Mountain. That hike will be led by Heather Priest. To join either hike, meet for a 9:30 a.m. departure at the Visitor Center and Ferry Terminal downtown on the appropriate day. And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.